Welcome to Pitch Deck Series 5, where we'll be having bite-sized conversations with established investors in early-stage startups. Looking to provide you with great nuggets of information when raising or considering raising seed capital. Pitch Deck is supported by Trumpet. If you work in sales or marketing and are tired of spending hours a week creating sales decks, then Trumpet is for you. Design personalized, interactive, and trackable mini sites in a few clicks. Stand out from the crowd whilst also giving your customers a seamless experience from pitch to onboarding. To find out more, visit www.sendtrumpet.com. That's sendtrumpet.com. And join the best in brass. So it's great to welcome Amory Polden into the Pitch Studio today. Amory started life out in investment banking before moving into VC and energy sector, moving to Shell Ventures as their venture principal. Shell Ventures, an arm of the oil company, invests in early stage companies that have reached proof of concept, focusing on fintech, insurtech, mobility, and clean tech. Amory is now setting up his own $20 million fund called Double Down, which will be launching end of February, and is looking to do 10 deals this year and a further 10 deals next year. They'll be focusing on lean startups that don't necessarily need further funding to get to Series A, and then the founder can decide whether they want to go down the VC route or grow from profitability. Amory has also been an angel investor in the past before setting up Double Down. So Amory, great to have you on the podcast.
Great to be here and thanks for the intro.
So let's dive straight in with, I suppose, Double Down for you, as you're not much of an angel investor anymore. So you mentioned the lean startups, which is great, which will resonate with a lot of people. Are there any particular verticals that excite you personally? And I'd be interested to know how regularly your thesis changes on the different types of verticals that interest you as well.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think first and foremost, we want to be founder driven. We want the innovators to guide us in terms of our thesis. We don't want to be overly dogmatic and say we'll invest in A, B, and C and then miss the next big trends that entrepreneurs are working on. Beyond that, what we're looking at today, we're really interested in developer startups, developer tools. We're also looking quite extensively at the future of work, remote work. And we've also, like most VCs, had a bit of a dip into the Web 3.0 crypto space, but more as it relates to kind of supporting infrastructure and services that are adjacent to the actual core Web 3.0 ecosystem.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'd be interested to know, so yeah, let's look at sort of Web3 and crypto, etc. As, you know, people being responsible for backing the future founders in this space, how much of a deep dive do you guys personally do within a new vertical? Or as you say, are you sort of led by the decks you receive and then do research from the decks?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. So we will try and form an overarching thesis or opinion on a particular sector. Then when we receive decks that fall underneath that sector that really excite us, what we'll then use is use that as a bit of a catalyst to then doing a much deeper penetrated study on a particular aspect of that market. So it's a little bit of a hybrid.
And in terms of cold outreach, I think this is always interesting to our listeners. You know, lots of founders don't have networks, especially first-time founders, and you're just going out there, you know, trying to email funds and VCs and angel investors. What we'll get into a deck later, but what makes the perfect sort of cold outreach message or email for you?
I tweeted about this yesterday because I received a hilarious one, which actually still had, you know, open brackets, first name, close brackets, really interested in open brackets fund. So all I would say on this point is try and make it tailored. I think the most interesting approaches are where a founder identifies a fit on the basis of that particular fund's investment thesis. So looking through your thesis or looking through similar companies, we think we are a fit for you because of X, Y, and Z. I think those are the ones which immediately jump out. We entertain all cold outreaches. We have a particular focus on underrepresented founders, founders from atypical backgrounds. We tend to find that those types of founders are far more predisposed towards building lean startups, the types of startups that we want to invest in. So we're very, very open to cold approaches. That being said, obviously, we receive a lot of applications. And so the way to really stand out is to tailor that message.
Yeah, I totally agree with personalization, and it comes up a lot on this podcast. So I think that's one that founders should definitely take note of. And in terms of before they they send you a deck or whatever, do you like to see any detail or top line information about the business, where they are, etc., within the email message?
I think it can help. I think if there are a couple of either KPIs or key messages that the founder is particularly proud of and that they think really hook the reader in, then by all means, put it into the email. Anything that you can do to help yourselves stand out on that first review is really, really useful. Now, I mean, what I would say is that we're going to look at every single deck that we receive. We'll always do that. What you're looking to do, though, is to just push yourself to the top of the pile and get that response immediately. And so having a couple of bullet points there and having that tailored message is what gets you to the top of that stack.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And in terms of how much research you then do, so when you get sent a deck and, you know, you want to go away and look at competitor sets and the market itself, how much do you take as sort of given from the deck, that the information's in the deck, and how much do you go away and sort of deep dive?
So I think initially we'll always give the founders the benefit of the doubt. They're building in an area which hopefully they know a huge amount about. And we are very much in learning mode in the first instance. And so I want to hear their view of the world. And then I want to go and test that myself. What I don't want to do is do a bunch of research myself cold and then come in with a whole bunch of heuristics into that first meeting that are possibly ill-informed and aren't really helpful for the conversation. So it's something that we will do afterwards to test their narrative rather than to come into the meeting and challenge it from the get-go.
And for me, the competitor slide, let's call it, in a deck always interests me. You know, I've received a lot of decks that don't mention a lot of the competitors, or they don't actually stand out versus the competitors, and, you know, they've created this deck themselves. How important is that slide to you, and how much do you post meeting then go away and do your own research on competitor sets?
Yeah, this is a brilliant question. And I think the standard matrix that most startups put in there for competitors is by and large completely useless, because of course the presenting startup is the one that's drawing the lines for that matrix. And so invariably they have ticks in every single box and all their competitors don't. I think what's far more interesting is, and this usually only comes across in conversation, is understanding how the value pools in the market that the startup is going for overlap with the competitive landscape, because that's really the point. Having competitors in a market in many cases is a really positive sign. But what I want to understand is how that then informs your strategy from a go-to-market perspective. So if there are competitors which are occupying adjacent verticals, for example, that's great. But tell me how that then informs your strategy in terms of the markets that you're going after over the next 1, 2, 3 years. And this plays into something that we believe very strongly in, is that startups that are tackling high-value niche markets with large adjacencies are among the most interesting businesses that we see. So a startup might be tackling a market which on the face of it is relatively small, but doesn't have a huge amount of competition, but is adjacent to some much, much bigger problems that do have competitors. So it's that interplay between market, competitive landscape, and go-to-market strategy, which is the most interesting competitive lens for us.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of positioning it. And I suppose just to give it some context that people can easily take away, if I would have done a deck again for Design My Night, you know, you would have looked at, you'd have had OpenTable, BookerTable, all these huge, you know, multi-billion in some cases dollar businesses. But the adjacent vertical of the bar industry was one that none of them were going after. And that was our slipstream, having done learnings from all of these huge competitors.
Yeah, great example.
And in terms of tailwinds in an industry, so, you know, Web3 being a good example of that, you know, is that important for you in a deck to see the industry tailwinds, and how do you like that to be presented in terms of the startup that's being presented to you?
So this one is a bit of a nuance because it can be both a positive and a negative. So, for example, I can describe a positive. The climate tech ecosystem has enormous tailwinds at the moment. So you're seeing a lot of businesses spinning up in the carbon accounting space, for example. And there are some big, big problems there, and it's not a winner-takes-all market. So that is potentially a really positive tailwind. Equally, there are some negative tailwinds where the kind of the hype and the FOMO of the VC industry is really focused on a particular sector, and that's driving up prices without necessarily a huge amount of evidence in terms of traction. Now, I think Web3 is fascinating, and there are some areas of that which I think are going to be really, really substantial categories in their own right. Equally, I think there are some aspects of it which are just being driven by momentum at the moment. And so arguably the most interesting sector for us, and we do take somewhat of a contrarian view in this regard, are directionally correct but out of favor categories. So an example of that might be legal tech, for example, which 5-10 years ago was really, really hot, is ice cold at the moment from the perspective of where VC dollars are going, but is directionally something which is going to happen over time. And so I think this is not a point where there's an easy one-size-fits-all example. I think it's really up to the founder to understand the investor that they're pitching to. Some will really, really like to see tailwinds and like to see that evidence. Others will like to see more of that contrarian type play. I think it's just be aware of who you're pitching to.
Talking about the founder or founders, do you have your own sort of internal, whether you write it down or not, sort of mind tests, like tick boxes for founder or founders that you're mentally ticking through, let's say on a first meeting? And if so, what is that for you?
Is this from the perspective of their backgrounds or the way that they're answering questions?
A bit of everything. So when you're thinking, are these founder or founders the ones that we're going to back? From a holistic global point of view, looking at them, what are those sort of key tick boxes that you like to have ticked?
Yeah, sure. Okay. So our ideal founder is someone who is building a product to solve a pain point that they have either personally experienced or in a space that they know well. For example, a lawyer in legal tech. We also prefer founding teams that can build at least a minimal version of their product themselves, and have the grit to get out there and sell early rather than adopting a sort of build it and they will come type approach. We really like founders outside of the normal mode, someone from outside of the main tech hubs, from an underrepresented background or atypical background. We find that those types of founders tend to both think outside the box, have enormous resourcefulness, and are usually building to genuinely solve a problem that they're passionate about rather than for social status, if I can say such a thing. In terms of the way that they behave in the meeting, there's a really easy success factor here, and it's around knowing the numbers of your business inside and out. I find it enormously impressive when I'm asking questions around unit economics and traction, and founders are able to instantly recall those numbers. And I think that's something that's obtainable for any founder. It's just fundamentally about knowing those numbers in advance and getting them to hand. So that's I guess, a little bit on the background. And a little bit in terms of how they handle the meeting. In terms of the founding team as a whole, we'd like to see that blend between product, sales, and tech represented on the founding team, ideally across two co-founders. But we've invested in businesses with one founder and businesses with three co-founders as well. So there's no hard and fast rule in terms of numbers.
Okay, nice. Yeah, that's a controversial one, the solo versus double versus triple founder, where some angel investors I know won't even consider it if it's a solo founder or even if it's a triple founder. So yeah, I think that's an interesting point, but not one to be worried about if you're a founder listing that's solo or triple. You know, as we're saying, it's very horses for courses. And in terms of the deck itself, questions I like to ask on this pod are, A, on the first flick of a deck, how long do you think you will take? Second, how long is too long for a deck? And third, what puts you off when flicking through a deck?
Okay, some great questions there. So I think it's important that the founders are addressing all of the kind of the key topics that investors are looking for. So there's no point in reinventing the wheel. I think you need to cover the problem, the solution, the market size, the business model, your traction, your competition, your team, and ideally something on your go-to-market strategy and pipeline. So within that, you've got, what is that? I guess a max of about a dozen slides. I think that's probably an appropriate length. In terms of what we like to see, I've mentioned that we really love it when a founder knows the numbers of the company inside and out. Even though we deal investments at a very early stage, we like to see that thought has gone into the unit economics and how those could then translate at scale. I'm personally not remotely interested in market size pages. I could probably cook up some data that suggests Ant Farming is a £10 billion opportunity. I think it's largely meaningless. Instead, yeah. I'd like to see that segmentation of the market. So really understanding the pools of value, the niches that the startup is going to take to tackle those pools sequentially. In terms of what we don't like so much, so first of all, strategically, we just don't like companies that spend £1 to make less than that and claim they'll make it up with scale. So having a credible path to break even is obviously very, very important for us with our strategy. And companies that can't answer the fundamental question around what happens if you don't raise this round. So we really like businesses that have a plan B. Now, that's not all investors behave like that. So that's something that's specific to us. The final point, which again is largely specific to us, is decks which talk about future fundraising as a function of time rather than development or milestones. And the distinction here is really subtle, but getting on that sort of 12 to 18 month cadence of fundraising, because that's just how other people do it, isn't really a great answer for us. We would far and away prefer to see someone that's thought deeply about the milestones that they need to achieve and the capital that's required to get there.
Brilliant. I think there's some amazing points for people to take away from that, and really like how sounds like Double Down are going to think slightly differently. And I'm sure a lot of founders listening will be excited to pitch you guys as well. So Amory, thank you so much for your insight. It was brilliant.
Loved it. Thanks, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. And if you enjoyed it, I'd hugely appreciate it if you can share it on socials or indeed just with your network. If you're feeling extra generous, I'd absolutely love it if you could leave us a review on Spotify, the Play Store, or iTunes. That is the only way we get more listeners. So thanks for that. If like me, you're fascinated by how the best founders think, then you should definitely check out the Secret Leaders podcast. Whilst we look at fundraising, they go a bit broader, finding out about the highs, lows, and learnings from people who've built businesses like Joe Malone, Monzo, Slack, and lastminute.com. You can even check out my episode on Secret Leaders, where I explain what went down with Design My Night. While you might be used to hearing all about great things that founders have achieved, Secret Leaders have just launched a new bite-sized series where founders talk about their biggest failures. Hear from Trini Woodall about the crash of her dot-com business, or Richard Clark on his pre-Dragon's Den days. I think you'll love it, so have a listen wherever you get your podcasts.